This segment is brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Visit them on the web at sectorspiders.com or call 866-SECTOR-ETF.
You're listening to the Index Investing Show. This is America's only weekly program focused on the important stock and bond indexes and the financial products that track them.
And now presenting your host,
Ron DeLegge. Ron DeLegge.
Are Chinese stocks too hot to handle? That coming up on today's show. Also, I do a portfolio report card for TC in Texas. They sent me a $5.2 million portfolio. We're going to drill down. We're going to dissect this investment portfolio. We'll look at all the holdings. And I will give this portfolio a grade of A, B, C, D, or F. Does it pass or does it fail? If you'd like to join us to talk about any particular stocks, mutual funds, ETFs, or investment strategies, you know the drill, 844-305-7800. Again, 844-305-7800. Give us your first name along with your city, and we will get to you. At Index Show is my Twitter handle. You can tweet the program live. You can also send me an email, ron@indexshow.com. Any questions, comments, or ticker symbols that you want me to cover, I can get into that. So I want to talk a little bit about Chinese stocks on today's show, in particular the A shares, which have been restricted to qualified institutions along with Chinese citizens. But this is an area that's been opening up to domestic investors, or strike that, foreign investors around the world. In other words, non-Chinese citizens and qualified institutional investors. So this is a new area that has been unavailable to the rest of the world. And it's just opened up in the recent past really couple years. And so I want to talk about some of the ETFs covering Chinese A-shares. They're called A-shares. And again, give you an update on what's happening there. Performance-wise, it's been a very hot area, but the question is it too hot? I mean, we've had 100-plus returns in just a matter of 12 months. And the question is this type of head-turning performance, will it last, or is it the signal of trouble ahead? Also, I want to get into this portfolio report card that I will be doing for TC in Texas. This is a $5.2 million portfolio. And just to give you some background about this is a married couple in their late 60s, and they are retired, and we're going to be looking at this $5.2 million account. It's divided among a joint account, a traditional IRA, and a Roth IRA. Pretty good sum of money. $5.2 million. What does a $5.2 million investment portfolio look like? Well, you're going to learn on today's show what this particular one looks like, and we're going to see if it's structured properly. You know, in other words, is it an architecturally sound investment portfolio, or is it got some weaknesses? People will make the mistake, and this is quite common, they'll just automatically assume that large portfolios are well built. Oh, well, they've got $5.2 million. Of course they've got a great looking portfolio. Well, not necessarily. That is not necessarily the case at all. Just because you have a lot of money inside your portfolio, or whatever you think is a lot of money, doesn't necessarily mean that your portfolio is minimizing cost. Doesn't mean your portfolio is maximizing diversification. Doesn't necessarily mean your portfolio is tax efficient or has a proper risk character that is compatible with who you are and what you're trying to achieve. And of course, performance. Just because the portfolio is large doesn't necessarily mean that its performance is satisfactory. So these are the things that you need to understand. In fact, you know, taking this a step further, if we look at the portfolios that mutual fund managers are overseeing, supervising, They manage very large portfolios, multi-billion dollar portfolios. Now, just because these portfolios are very large in nature doesn't necessarily make them good. In fact, it's quite interesting to see that the bulk of these managers consistently underperform their corresponding benchmark or yardstick. So the fact that they're large does not necessarily mean that they're good or that they're architecturally sound and well-built. So we're going to take this, though, in the context of you, the individual investor. That's exactly who TC is. They are from Texas. This is a married couple in their late 60s. And this is the context of the portfolio report cards that I do. Every single time on this show, we feature these portfolio report cards to help you understand the strengths and the weaknesses of your own portfolio. This is real money. These are not invented figures. These are real people with real money and real problems and also real needs from a financial perspective. So we're going to be looking at this portfolio on today's show, and you're going to learn a lot. If you'd like to join us, we're here, 844-305-7800. Give us your first name along with your city. I'm here. Also, if you want to talk about a specific mutual fund or ETF or stock, give us the ticker symbol, and we'll drill down and take a look at that. Now, taking a look at I want to just focus on one particular market before we get you caught up on what's happening in the broader financial markets. But one particular market that's gotten a lot of attention as of late are Chinese stocks. Now, ticker symbol ASHR, that's the Deutsche Harvest CSI 300 China A-Shares ETF. Now, this tracks the Shanghai Composite, and it is a large cap index, meaning it tracks large company stocks. ASHR is the ticker symbol. Over the past year, this ETF has surged 126%. My goodness. Now, what's especially shocking is that when ASHR was first launched in November of 2013, it was a fairly obscure fund with less than $200 million in assets. Since then, ASHR's asset base has surged sevenfold to around $1.5 billion in less than 2 years' time. Pretty impressive. Now, the smaller cap version, or we might say smaller cap cousin of ASHR, is ASHS, which tracks Chinese small cap stocks, again, that are listed on either the Shanghai or Shenzhen stock markets. So those are the two mainland stock exchanges. And both of these funds, by the way, the securities or stocks within them trade in China's official currency, the renminbi. So the question here, again, and I raised this at the outset, you know, is this performance over the past year, this eye-popping performance, is it too hot to handle? And we have seen a couple of reasons this has happened. Number one, reams of money are being thrown at these markets, just like what we've seen with central bankers doing in Europe and the United States and Japan. Well, same thing's happening with the People's Bank of China, PBOC. They cut their benchmark interest rate three times over the past 6 months alone. And on top of that, they're reducing banks' reserve requirement ratio. So there's a lot of embedded leverage within the financial system in China happening. And stocks like that. They like that fact that this has been a very accommodative central bank. So that's been certainly a major catalyst. But there's a couple of other catalysts that I want to mention and share with you on today's show that I think are pushing up Chinese shares. And then, of course, I'll give you my take on whether Chinese stocks are too hot to handle and whether this particular rally can last. 844-305-7800. You're listening to the Index Investing Show. I'm Ron DeLegge. I'll be right back. Go nowhere.
Show with Lon DeLegere.
Welcome back from the break. This is the Index Investing Show. I'm your host, Ron DeLegge. I will be doing a portfolio report card for TC in Texas on today's program. You're in for a treat. This is a pretty good-sized portfolio, $5.2 million. And we're going to dissect this portfolio, analyze it, and grade it. We're also talking about the Chinese market, which has soared over the past year. As I mentioned earlier, up over 126%. Now, this is the Chinese A shares, which is mainland Chinese stocks, which have traditionally only been available to Chinese citizens and qualified institutions. And now we've seen ETFs that invest in this area beginning to open up this particular market. And FTSE Russell, which is an index provider based out of London, one of the biggest out there, along with the MSCI and S&P, announced that it will be including in some of its indexes these Chinese A shares. So we've seen a kind of a pop because of the fact that these indexes will be buying Chinese A shares. And this is going to be a trend, I think, that we see in the coming years with more indexes owning Chinese A shares, thus forcing institutional investors around the globe to purchase Chinese A shares, to have exposure to this market. I don't want to say it's untapped, but it is underrepresented in many major market indexes. And this is just a part of what's going on in China, a loosening of foreign capital restrictions. And this has been a boom to Chinese equities, the A share market, because as I said earlier, China still restricts investments made in A shares, which trade in Shanghai and Shenzhen to domestic Chinese investors and to renminbi qualified foreign institutional investors. Those are the only two that can really invest in this area. And so the recent introduction of listed ETFs that invest in A shares is evident that the Chinese government seems poised to allow this trend to continue. A loosening of foreign capital restrictions, more outside investment. And if this liberalization continues, it could pave the way for higher equity prices. And I know that prices have soared tremendously for Chinese A shares over the past year. But I think that this loosening, again, of foreign capital restrictions has a way of opening up the floodgates. So that's one of the other factors contributing to this. And so I'm going to share with you, though, my final conclusion on this matter on today's show. Stay tuned for that. 844-305-7800. You're listening to the Index Investing Show. I'm your host, Ron DeLegge. Please join us. Give us your first name along with your city. Any particular ETFs, stocks, mutual funds, or ticker symbols that you want me to cover or talk about, just give us that, along with your first name and city, 844-305-7800. You can also tweet the program live at Index Show. And if you ever miss our regular radio broadcast for whatever reason, you can pick up our podcast. It's available on iTunes and SoundCloud Radio. Please do give us a review, too. Let others know what you think about the show. Now, let's look at this report card, this portfolio report card for TC in Texas. This is a $5.2 million portfolio. And let me just give you a little bit of background about TC. This is a married couple that's retired. They're in their late 60s. And some of the things that I ask, besides for portfolio data, because I can't do a report card without portfolio data, but one of the things that I always ask is I want to understand the people behind the money. And with TC, I asked them some very targeted questions so that I can understand what their investment goals are. So I asked them, which best describes your investment objective? And they told me that it's to have a balanced portfolio that seeks both capital appreciation as well as generating income with moderate volatility. I asked them what their level of risk tolerance is, how much risk they can handle, and on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest, they wound up being a 5, right in the middle. So that would suggest to me that they are conservative investors. They're neither risk aggressive or over-conservative or focused on capital preservation, we might say. So they're right about in the middle. And they told me that their investment time horizon is 10 years or more. So their main focus here, again, is to have a balanced portfolio. They want to have some growth or appreciation, but they also want to have some income. And they also mentioned that they want to preserve some of their principal. So these are some of their goals with this $5.2 million portfolio. Now, this is this money is divided across a joint taxable investment account or brokerage account, a traditional IRA, and a Roth IRA. And the combined portfolios hold 19 mutual funds, 13 individual stocks, 4 ETFs, 2 annuities, and cash. Now, the funds just to give you an idea of the breakdown there, too, just a little bit further. The mutual funds of this $5.2 million portfolio account for $4.1 million. So that's how much they've got invested in mutual funds. $235,000 is invested in individual stocks, and they've got around $867,000 in annuities. They've got a fixed annuity and a variable annuity. So that's their portfolio in the nutshell. So let's look at the first grading category, and there's 5. And those 5, just for listeners that are new to this show, when we do a portfolio report card, I analyze and grade portfolios in 5 areas. And these are the only 5 areas that matter, and this applies to everybody, whether your portfolio is $100,000, $100 million, or $100 billion. These are the only 5 things that matter when it comes to investment portfolios. Number 1, cost. Number 2, diversification. Number 3, risk. Number 4, tax efficiency. And number 5, performance. So with TC's portfolio, we're going to begin with the first grading category, which is cost. Now, all well-built portfolios, all architecturally sound investment portfolios, deliberately minimize the negative impact of cost. Now, this can be done a couple of ways. Obviously, if you're going to invest, you need to minimize cost. And it's also important for me to say that investing is not a cost-free activity. You'd be very naive to believe that the funds or investments you own are free and that they're not costing you anything. That's a very ignorant view that some people have because they don't get a bill every month in the mail. They don't see it being deducted from their checking account. And so they misassume that these investment fees don't really matter. Well, you can minimize costs, number one, by minimizing your trading activity. All those trading trades that you put in, buys and sells, that those commissions add up over time. The other part of this is minimizing your fund expenses. So this can be easily achieved by holding a portfolio of very low-cost index ETFs. That's a great way to have a low-cost portfolio. So in terms of cost, now I mentioned that this is a $5.2 million portfolio. About just over $4 million is invested in mutual funds. So let's concentrate our attention on those. These 19 mutual funds, and most of them are with Fidelity. The largest one that they've got about $640,000 in ticker symbol FSTVX. That's the Fidelity Spartan Total Market Index Fund. Charges an annual expense ratio of just 5 basis points, which is very low. That's 0.05%. In terms of the asset-weighted annual expenses of the total portfolio, just 35 basis points or 0.35%. I'll give you more on my take on that when we return.
The Index Investing Show with Lon DeLegge.
Are you frustrated with how your investments never seem to grow? Do you feel like your investment plan might be off track? Are you concerned about your portfolio's fees, taxes, and risk? If you answered yes to any of these questions, you're not alone. Get the help you need with Ron DeLegge's free portfolio report card. Get a snapshot of your current investments and find out if your financial plan is really on track. Go to ETFguide.com and click on Ron's portfolio report card. Millions of people are investing blindly in the stock market. Don't be one of them. Ron DeLegge's free portfolio report card tells you everything you need to know about your portfolio's fees, taxes, and risk. Go to ETFguide.com and click on Ron's portfolio report card. Traditional IRA, Roth IRA, 401k plan, or brokerage account. It doesn't matter what you have. Ron's free portfolio report card will tell you everything you need to know. Go to ETFguide.com and click on Ron's portfolio report card. Don't invest without it.
Yes. We're in the investment saloon. Anybody want to have another beer? Yes. So this is what we're doing on today's show, talking about a $5.2 million investment portfolio for TC in Texas. I'm analyzing and grading it on today's show. I forgot to mention that if they get an A, I pay them $100. Isn't that sweet? Isn't that wonderful? And that's actually a challenge I send out to all of our listeners. If your portfolio scores an A, I pay you $100. Go to portfolioreportcard.com and take my challenge. Does your portfolio get an A, B, C, D, or F? Take Ron DeLegge's portfolio report card challenge and find out. If you get an A, I get out my wallet and pay you $100. That simple. Now, for TC in Texas, this is a married couple in their late 60s. You know, I should probably also mention his line of work, because sometimes it comes up, people wonder, well, how were they able to get this much money? You know, it doesn't happen by osmosis. They didn't win the lottery. Number one, it comes from having a good job, but also being a good saver. And he was actually in the pharmaceutical sales business. He worked at Pfizer for a number of years. And so among the 13 individual stocks held in this $5.2 million portfolio, the largest holding as far as individual stocks is concerned is Pfizer. Ticker symbol PFE, got around $140,000 invested there. But as I explained to you earlier, the bulk of this portfolio, just over $4 million, is mostly invested in diversified mutual funds with Fidelity. And the largest holding, as explained earlier, FSTVX, that is a total stock market, U.S. stock market mutual fund, with very low expenses, around $640,000 is invested there. And the asset-weighted annual expenses of this portfolio, at least the mutual fund part, is just 35 basis points, or 0.35%, which we ask ourselves, is that high or low? Now, some people would say, oh, that's low. Well, when I compare it to my index benchmark, it's still 40% higher compared to my index benchmark. So from that perspective, they can definitely do a lot better in terms of minimizing investment costs. Now, they've done a pretty good job, but again, they can make some improvements in minimizing costs. Next up is diversification. And what is a diversified portfolio? Well, it's very simple. A portfolio that has exposure to all the major asset classes. And there's five biggies: stocks, bonds, commodities, real estate, and cash. Those are the five major asset classes. We might also say that those are the five core asset classes. Now, one of the mistakes that I see a lot of people making with their portfolios is that they're investing in non-core asset classes while simultaneously missing exposure to core asset classes. So what am I talking about? Give me an example of what you mean, Ron. Well, here's what I mean. people that would have, like, for example, an investment portfolio built around individual stocks, okay? Stocks, individual stocks, are non-core assets. So having the bulk of your portfolio invested in non-core assets while missing the core assets, the broadly diversified types of assets, like a fund that invests broadly in stocks versus just owning single pieces of that market, non-core assets, or perhaps another example might be investing in hedge funds or venture capital or private equity. Perfect examples of non-core assets or non-core types of things that don't make up the foundation of your portfolio or shouldn't. So the core asset classes, again, stocks, bonds, commodities, real estate, and cash, those are the five biggies. And the idea here is broad exposure to these five core asset classes. That's the foundation. That's the core of your portfolio. In terms of TC's $5.2 million portfolio, a joint account, a traditional, and a Roth IRA, the combined portfolios do have exposure to international and U.S. stocks. Very good. They also have exposure to U.S. real estate. They own ticker symbol VNQ, not a very big holding. And they do also hold cash in this portfolio, almost $400,000 in cash. They also have a fixed annuity, which is around $400,000 in value, which I would say is a close to cash equivalent. They've held it for a while. It's pretty liquid. So we can also add that to the mix in terms of exposure to cash. So pretty good job. I mean, exposure to bonds, exposure to U.S. real estate, exposure to cash, exposure to both domestic and foreign stocks in this $5.2 million portfolio for TC. However, there are two areas that they do miss in terms of diversification: international real estate and commodities. So those two areas are shortcomings with regard to diversification. And let's take a look at the next area, which is risk. So we've already looked at the cost of the portfolio. We've already looked at the diversification. They did okay in both categories. Obviously, room for improvement, but so far, not a very bad start for TC. I mean, this portfolio could be an A at this stage, and if it is, I pay them $100. Now, let's take a look at the next area, which is risk. And what I look for, when we talk about risk of a portfolio, I want to see a portfolio that's perfectly compatible with the owner in terms of its risk character. So that means that, for example, and it, by the way, it should also be age appropriate. So that means, for example, if you're age 70, then that portfolio should accurately reflect your level of risk tolerance or capacity. It should also be age appropriate. In other words, if you're 70, you shouldn't be investing like you're 20. The asset mix should reflect not just your financial goals, but it should be age appropriate. Now, in terms of the asset mix, or as they say, asset allocation of TC's $5.2 million portfolio, and this is big picture. This is the combined portfolio spread across these three different accounts. So they've got 59% invested in stocks overall. 22% is invested in bonds. And then around 3% is invested in real estate. And then 16% invested in cash. So this is a late 60s couple. Now the question is this compatible with who they are? Well, they describe themselves to me as conservative investors. We talked about that earlier, didn't we? They said one of their main objectives, obviously they want growth. Everybody wants growth, but growth is really not their core focus at this stage of the game. They don't want to see their money evaporate in the case of a sharp market correction. So part of their goal is to also preserve some of this $5.2 million portfolio, because they can't afford to get nuclear bombed at this late stage of their investing career. And so this portfolio, just to give you some perspective on how it would handle a severe market correction, this asset mix of 59% stocks, 22% bonds, 3% real estate, and 16% cash, a 20 to 40% stock market decline would subject the combined portfolios to potential market losses between $600,000 all the way up to $1.2 million in potential market losses. Pretty significant amount. And I think that this portfolio could definitely do a better job at managing risk. More when I return. I'm Ron DeLegge. This is the Index Investing Show.
The Index Investing Show with Ron DeLegge.
So what's going on with your investment portfolio? Does it pass or does it fail? How do you do in terms of cost, diversification, risk, tax efficiency, and performance? Do you have an IRA, 401k plan, traditional brokerage account, trust account, UGMA account, whatever it is that you've got, and you don't understand it, you can't figure it out? Take my Portfolio Report Card Challenge. Go to PortfolioReportCard.com. See if your portfolio passes or fails. If you get an A, I pay you $100. PortfolioReportCard.com. So we're doing this. This is really the final stretch of the report card for TC in Texas. And they are in their late 60s, retired. $5.2 million portfolio. We already looked at cost, diversification, and I was talking about risk toward the tail end of the previous segment. And we mentioned that this particular asset mix, 59% stocks, 22% bonds, 3% real estate, 16% cash. It's nice to see that they've got a cash cushion. That's outstanding. The hallmark of all well-built portfolios is to have some cushion. And this portfolio does have some cushion. However, it's still, its current asset mix exposes TC to around $600,000 in potential market losses all the way up to $1.2 million if we get a stock market decline in the vicinity of 20 to 40%. In other words, this portfolio would take a pretty significant hit in that type of environment. Now, one of the problems, and this leads into one of the other categories, the grading categories, which is diversification, is that they are under-diversified to a couple of areas, international real estate and commodities. They've got no exposure to those areas. And so in terms of balancing out the risk of this portfolio, adding those two areas could certainly, I think, help to minimize the threat of market losses. And that cash position that they've got, 16%, is outstanding. They may even decide to increase it a little bit, but really it's a personal matter in terms of how much of a cushion that you want to have inside your portfolio. Some people want more cushion than others. I kind of compare it to an insurance deductible. Philosophically, what's your opinion? Should you have a low deductible or a high deductible? Well, if you have a lower deductible, that means you have less tolerance for risk, right? If you have a higher deductible, that means that you're able to handle, you're able to stomach more risk. So that's kind of how I compare that to. Now, in terms of tax efficiency of this portfolio, as I mentioned, there's two tax deferred accounts involved here, a traditional IRA and a Roth IRA. And in terms of those portfolios, The Roth IRA only has about $20,000 in it, and the traditional IRA, they're going to have to start taking some distributions when they reach age 70 and a half, and that's coming up in just a couple short years. But I haven't seen them do anything in terms of that would hurt their or increase their tax liabilities. And that's something that we don't want to see. They've got their bonds and their REITs held in their traditional IRA, which is the way you want it. Those are two tax inefficient asset classes, bonds and REITs. So best held in a tax deferred type of retirement account. And they're doing that. Overall, on tax efficiency, I think they do a pretty good job. In terms of performance, and this is the final grading category, the combined portfolios grew just over $300,000 over the past year. And I'm looking at April to April figures, April 2014 to April 2015. Our index benchmark, and in terms of performance, I should add that that works out to be around a 7.5% gain over the past year versus our index benchmark, which gained around 6%. In other words, their portfolio outperformed our index benchmark, which has the same asset mix, 59% stocks, 22% bonds, 3% real estate, 16% cash. They outperformed by about 1.5%, which is outstanding. Well done. And the final portfolio report card for TC is a B. This is an excellent score, and they did quite well. Their two strongest grading categories were clearly tax efficiency and performance. And you say, well, how did they do so good in performance? Well, one of the explanations of some of that sizzling performance is some of those individual stocks that they own. They own 13. And one of them, the largest holding, is Pfizer, PFE, which that whole healthcare sector has been on fire. And, of course, he worked in that sector. And so that contributed, I think, to some of the outperformance. Also, some exposure to Apple, AAPL, that's been a good performer. So those were the excellent grading categories. In terms of weaknesses, clearly diversification needs to be improved. In terms of risk, that also could be improved, and also cost. The $4.1 million invested in mutual funds, I mean, they're paying asset-weighted expenses of 35 basis points, which, as I said earlier, is 40% higher compared to my index ETF benchmark. So they've got some fat to cut in this portfolio, and if they do that, and they come back to me and ask for another portfolio report card, and they make these adjustments, this portfolio could very well be an A, I think. I think that they've overall have done a pretty good job. This is self-managed, too, by the way. They do not have a financial advisor helping them pick their investments. And so I think for amateur investors that are individuals that manage their own money, I think they've done, generally speaking, a pretty good job. So if you'd like to get a portfolio report card and find out if your portfolio passes or fails, go to PortfolioReportCard.com and get in touch with me. Thank you, TC, for taking Ron DeLegge's Portfolio Report Card Challenge. Now, in terms of market performance, if we take a look since the beginning of the year at the total U.S. stock market, ticker symbol VTI, ahead by about 3.5%, outperforming gold, outperforming bonds. But what U.S. stocks are lagging is versus international and emerging market stocks, which have outperformed in 2015. Global real estate market is beginning to cool off. REET is the ETF that follows that area, down about 0.5% on the year. Sector-wise, if we take a look at the industry sectors in the S&P 500, XLV, tracking healthcare stocks, ahead by almost 10%. XLK, tracking technology stocks, ahead by 5.3%. Those two areas still are performing strongly. And then XLU, which tracks utilities, this is the weakest performing sector in the S&P 500, down around 5%. And again, those figures are provided courtesy of the Wall Street Journal. If you ever miss our regular radio broadcast, just a reminder, pick up our podcast. It's available at iTunes as well as SoundCloud Radio. Also, I write and publish the monthly edition of the ETF Profit Strategy newsletter. The June issue is out. Go to ETFguide.com to pick up a copy. We talked earlier about Chinese stocks, the A shares. One last thing I want to add that I think is important is if we take a look at the equity trading volume of this particular market, do you realize, do you understand that equity trading volume in Shanghai and Shenzhen stock exchanges in April alone out traded the New York Stock Exchange? So this is something that we saw in April, and trading volume is exploding in China. Ultimately, the disagreement about whether Chinese stocks are good investments or in frothy realm is completely healthy. Beware of whenever there's a consensus viewpoint that's in full agreement about the direction or valuation of the Chinese market or any market. So thankfully, that doesn't describe the Chinese stock market right now. And if we see this continued liberalization and this addition of Chinese A shares into equity indexes, it could bode for even higher prices. Well, that does it for another episode of the Index Investing Show. Thanks for joining us. And until we meet again, may the market indexes be with you.
The opinions expressed in this broadcast are not necessarily that of our advertisers, sponsors, or broadcast partners. The discussion of investing is general and should not be construed as investment advice or an offer to buy or sell securities. Listeners are responsible for their own investment decisions and results. Before investing in mutual funds or ETFs, always consult a prospectus for risk, charges, expenses, and other information. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Past performance is not indicative of future results. No reproduction or dissemination of the Index Investing Show is permitted without the expressed written consent of its producers.